welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast, and welcome to my car outside of a Love's truck stop. I am halfway to Metrotham Con. I finally understood the name this morning. It's so obvious. I was pronouncing it Metrotham, which, you know, that's fair if you try to read it, but it has a lot of superhero fandom involved, so it's Metropolis and Gotham, Metrotham. Anyway, so I am halfway to Metrotham Con right now, and I am going to give you my little presentation that I'm going to give them tomorrow. Maybe you'll see it the same day, because for me, it's Thursday night, June 19th. And yes, I hope you had a good Juneteenth. I always grew up being aware of that holiday because I grew up in Texas, and that was just part of the scene down there. Anyway, so I'm going to give you my little presentation that I'm going to do for them tomorrow. This is my practice run. I threw this together this morning. It attempts to be broad, so it's not going to have a lot of specific things. Also, I'm sorry if my image blocks something down in the corner. That's just how it's going to be, because I'm not going to try to bother switching back and forth and moving the thing. I know that there are going to be a lot of things I'm going to miss in this presentation. I know that there are some things I've already realized. Where did I put that post-it note? So after I stop this recording, I'm going to go and I'm going to try to upload it to YouTube on their Wi-Fi, and then I'm going to go to sleep in the car, and then I'm going to wake up nice and early and drive the next 4.5 hours to Metrotham Con and set up my table, sell some books, do this panel presentation type thing in the early evening at 5 o'clock if you're in range of Dalton, Georgia. That'll be tomorrow. So I'll read these things to you at the end of my presentation, because you might notice the holes. So this is Build It Yourself Fantasy, maps, manuscripts, and more. Now, I don't know if the con has put out the description for this presentation, for this session, but I'll give you the description. And it's basically kind of how to be an independent author, how to do the writing and editing. You can do your maps. Now, I commission cover art, so I'll touch on that. Producing a podcast and even recording your own audiobook, which I have not done because I am doing currently. I say hands-on, but it's touching it lightly because there's too much to cover in depth. In fact, I'm going to rip through this hopefully pretty quickly, although I have lots of slides. So who am I? I am author T.S. Pedramon, as you can see at the tops of those book covers. And I'm just a nerd. I play clarinet. I like fantasy. And yeah, those are my two books. And that is the map that I made. So we'll talk more about how I got there and how you can get yourself to that point for yourself. So what does this mean? This is an exploratory overview of these various things. This is not a deep dive. I'm going to miss some things. In fact, these things, I'll work them into the slides. I'll mention them, but I'm not going to dig into them because I'm not good on those things. And so I should not do a how-to for two of those things. For one of them, it's more of an option. I'm opting not to do that thing. Okay, so let's jump in. First of all, like, whatever comes throughout this presentation, above all, do what works for you. DWIFI, right? I won't probably really use that acronym, but think of it. Remember it. Do what works for you. This is what's been working for me. Each task that you're going to do, whether it's writing or editing, illustrating, whatever you do, there are different ways to go about it. Some I'll share what works for me. You'll have to adapt it to yourself. I don't have all the answers. You take what works and you work on what isn't working for you. You try to fix it, but if something isn't going to work for you, don't stress it. Some very successful authors out there swear by TikTok. Some very successful authors don't use it at all. So, do what works for you. Writing rule number one is to write. And I mean that. If you dream of writing a book, it's just a dream unless you're doing some writing. You can talk about it all day. You can plan it. You can intend to do it. But if you don't put in a little bit of time and actually make it happen, then it's never going to happen. In fact, when I was writing my first book, I put this on the wall behind my computer so I could see that, because I was stressing, like, how am I going to write this book? How do I know whether it's going to be any good? How do I make it be good? And so I am one of those who kind of naturally stops myself. And I will not do a thing because I don't know how to do it right, or how to feel like I'm being successful at it. And the thing is, you're not going to be successful at it if you don't do it at all. So I put it on my wall, write a lousy book, and then in parentheses, fix it. So then fix it. It's going to be lousy at first, right? It's going to have problems. Accept it. You are human, and a book is too big to not have issues. It's going to have issues, and you can never fix them if it doesn't exist first. So, excuse me. So again, rule number one is to write. Now, there are some different tools and techniques, different ways to do things. To get it on the page, there's people mention plotting versus pantsing. Some people don't like the term pantsing. They prefer the term discovery writing. That's fine. I actually like the term pantsing, meaning flying by the seat of your pants. You know, you're out there, you're doing it, you don't have a plan, you're just seeing what happens, flying by the seat of your pants. You're pantsing, they say. So, like, some people plot, some people swear by it, some people discovery write, and they swear by that technique, that method. It's just whatever works for you. Maybe try a little bit of each and see what works for you. And there are different software platforms you can use. You can write with Microsoft Word. You can use LibreOffice, which is a free alternative to Word, well, to Microsoft Office. And so the LibreOffice application equivalent for Word would be Write. It's called Write. You can use Google Docs, which is free also, along with LibreOffice. Although Google Docs is, Google's ecosystem is built on ad revenue above all anything else. And then there's Atticus, and we'll talk more about Atticus later. Atticus is not a free tool, and there are different aspects to each one of these. So Microsoft Word, you can have it set up to save everything automatically in OneDrive so that it's backed up online. LibreOffice, I am unaware if it has any feature. When I used it a lot, it did not have such a feature, nor did Microsoft Word in those days. Google Docs is completely online, almost completely online. Atticus is online. So Atticus is automatically backed up to the web, whatever you write in there. Now, I use Microsoft Word mostly, but I also have Discord. Sorry, I do have that, but that's not what I meant to say. I have Dropbox. So anything that I write, anything that I save is automatically backed up to the internet, and I can access it anywhere. I can pull it up on my phone. I don't tend to do that because it's ungainly. It's difficult to really work with it on a small screen like that and without a keyboard. And I can jump from my laptop to the desktop, and there it is, you know? And there's just personal preference. Also, I didn't put on the slide, but there's Scrivener. I don't remember if Scrivener exists for Windows. I know it's a lot of people love it on Mac. I'm not really aware of what feature set it has, because when I was interested, it was only for Mac. Maybe it still is. I don't know. Now, your approach to it, not just where you are entering the text. Your approach, it could be ByChalk, which is butt in chair, hands on keyboard. It could be a smartphone app, or you could dictate it. And when I say smartphone app, I've heard of people writing books in Apple Notes. I started writing a book in Samsung Notes, and I have used Samsung Notes from time to time. And that is nice because it's backed up to the web. Now, for dictation, if you talk through your book and you record it like that, you'll need some software to convert the speech to text. And there are so many different software options for that these days. You can see those listed on the screen. Now, there's also like how fast are you trying to push the book out? Are you trying to make sure it happens, or are you just kind of casual and you want to write it as the muse strikes you? So when I was writing book one, I definitely had my first book. I mean, I definitely had a word count goal for each day, and I was in contact with a mentor, and this mentor said, do 2,000 words a day. Now, I wanted to give myself Sunday off, so I took 14,000 words and I divided by 6, and I did about 2,300 words per day. So I had a word count goal to make sure that it happened, to make sure that I got the words on page, on screen. Those are different approaches, and you can do that as you wish. Now, I have not kept that word count goal ever since finishing that book. When I was working on book two, I set another word count goal for each day. I was a little looser with it, but I was also able to output a lot faster because I learned some techniques that, largely dictation. So different approaches, you do what works for you. This picture here is me about to go and dictate. I like to go on, kind of hikes, easy nature walks, not rugged, steep mountain, because then I'm fighting the trail. Not fighting, but that's the trail is a distraction from getting the work done. Here, like going out in nature, it's really helpful for me to be able to talk it through. Now, I do plotting, and I go out there. I don't know where my microphone is right now. It's somewhere nearby. But I go out with a little recorder. I'll show you a picture and a few slides. And I'll go out with a little description of the scene that I'm trying to write, or the chapter that, I'll go out with a couple of descriptions and take a minute, think about it. Okay, this is going to happen. And I'll hit record and capture the scene. I am definitely a plotter. So I mentioned that I go out with a little description of scenes. This is the map that I made. I drew the map before book one was published. But here you see that I printed it out large, and we've got post-it notes on it. And these post-it notes are kind of reminders to myself or not reminders yet, at least. But I was working out like, I want to make sure I have rich cultures in this world. And so we have, I think the green post-it notes were rough cultural analogs to the real world. And so like over here, something might be intended to have a cultural callback to the indigenous people of North America, or over there to European culture, or all around the different world. And then the yellow post-it notes were going to be kind of more ethnic analogs. And I mixed it up, so I liked to. Okay, that's neither here nor there. That might be fun to learn about. But this is, I needed this map before I could write book two. Because the journey was, you know, kind of going beyond the main character's homeland, and I needed to know what she was going to encounter. And I need to stay consistent with myself as the series goes. And so I needed to have some documentation, like this is this, and that is that over there. So yes, I'm a plotter. You don't have to be. Some great authors fly by the seat of their pants. I heard that, what was it? Tolkien was just as surprised as the reader when Frodo stumbled into Aragorn, because he hadn't planned that particular thing. And I do kind of large scale plotting and small scale pantsing. Like I said, I'll go with a short description of what needs to happen in a scene, and then I'll make up the small details on the way. Okay, so this is a screenshot from Atticus. You can use it to write in, like within Atticus. I don't really do that. I use Microsoft Word, but Atticus does exist. We'll talk about Atticus again later. You see that it says writing and formatting up here. So this is the writing interface. So you can write it right in there, right into Atticus. No pun intended. But it's a great tool. It's not free. I think it was $130 one time ever, and then you have it forever. Great tool. I use it for formatting. We'll talk again later. That is a real bear that I saw while I was out. It was this day. I was out dictating, and I came across a bear. Don't worry, I was far away. This picture is crazy zoomed in. Here is the not zoomed in bear. I think about 200 yards away. Anyway, so I saw that bear, and I took a few pictures, and I turned around and walked back the other way, and the bear left me alone. Okay, so to get it on the page, I do have to acknowledge that AI exists. Some people use it. I'm not here to pass judgment on this topic. I think we all need to accept that it exists. It has different applications. And whether you use it or not is going to depend on the goals you have with your writing. I don't use generative AI to write my books. My words are my words. I decided to use those words. I didn't say write me a scene. Like I don't do that. Now, if you do use AI, you may be required to disclose that. Now, when you upload a book to Amazon, it's just a checkbox. They want to know if you use generative AI to help create the manuscript or the art, the visuals. And then they don't stop you from publishing it. You just have to checkbox. Other people may want to know. So I would encourage, be upfront about it. Don't try to hide it. Don't get caught with an AI prompt in your book when you never disclose that you used AI to help you write it. Okay, so once you have your book on the page, it's time to move on to editing. So option one is hire an editor. And I would highly recommend that if it's feasible for you in your situation. Don't go blind. Don't go on to like editors.com and hire some random editor. Get some recommendations. Network it. Like go to a conference, meet people, or you can have them do a sample. Still, I would be wary of internet-only contact. That's just me. If it works for you, that's great. But you can have them do a sample, and I would not hire an editor without doing a sample, unless perhaps if for that networking factor, like if they come highly recommended and you know well the person who recommended this editor to you. Option two is the hard way. To self-edit, it's also risky. But tools do exist to help you out. And it's much less risky. It's much more manageable than it used to be. So some of these tools, Grammarly exists. I've never used it. Pro Writing Aid, I have tried it. I have used it. More about that in a minute. And even Microsoft Word. Microsoft Word does automatic spelling and grammar checks, and that is helpful. If you do self-edit, do multiple passes and do it different ways. Print it out and like mark it up with a pen physically, if that's going to help you to be able to touch the paper and read it out loud, that forces you to go through. You'll catch a lot of things that you wouldn't catch if you didn't force yourself to take that step. And if you self-edit, if you go it alone, don't actually go it alone. Like get beta readers to help you, not editing. Don't use beta readers for the purpose of editing. But when you do share it with beta readers, say, hey, if you notice things, let me know. Because mistakes will get through even after you read it all aloud and after you like mark it with a pen. Things will still get through. So you take all these steps, you take all these precautions, use these software tools to catch things, but be prepared for this. So you can see on the screen, this is my first book, and I found this error yesterday. Like literally, I found this yesterday as I was reading the audiobook. This has been out for a year and a few months, and every single copy that exists has this typo. Delgan said, as A spun one mallet in his fingers. It's supposed to be as he spun one mallet, obviously, you know. Little mistake that didn't get caught. It got through. So this is why not to self-edit. This is an example of why not to self-edit, because more things are going to get through if you don't have somebody whose job it is to catch those things, right? More things will get through. I started reading a book with my wife. Like, I was reading it aloud to her last fall, and I didn't give up on it. I just, life is crazy, and we haven't had a chance to continue. We're not very far into it, just a couple of chapters. But like every second or third line, I catch something. Like, I would really recommend that this author have a legitimate editor. And if this author hired an editor, then this author should hire a different editor. Yeah. Now, I was brave enough to go and self-edit because I know that some people do it and they are still successful. And maybe I'm arrogant. I honestly, not to toot my own horn, I honestly do believe that I am more aware of grammar and spelling and intricacies, not just that, but syntax and story structure than most people. And I think that has been backed up by many experiences I've had. So be prepared for errors to happen. You have to accept a higher probability if you self-edit. On the other hand, professional editors do miss things. Here it is, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And it says, I don't who put my name in the Goblet of Fire, right? They left out the word no. Pretty obvious mistake. And yet it made it to publication. It happens. It happens. It does. So moving on. Talking about Pro Writing Aid. It is a very nifty tool, though it is AI-based. Some people absolutely swear by it. Excuse me. And it is a pretty cool tool. If you hate AI, then maybe don't use Pro Writing Aid because it is AI-based. Now, a word on... So, like, how I use Pro Writing Aid... I do not use it for generative use. It's not at heart a generative tool, but it has generative features. You can have it reword things or whatnot. I look at the rewording suggestions because sometimes I do phrase things awkwardly. But you have to be very careful because the awful side of things is that these rewording suggestions mean that pro writing aids, and like this is a big feature of the platform, that it can catch and it can suggest better ways to word things. It's a voice eraser, as Martin Shoemaker put it. I saw him put it that way once on social media. I want to produce my own words. And if I accept all these rewordings, it's going to be erasing my voice. Now, I do look at them because it can catch some things where I have worded things awkwardly. I look at them, I consider, and then I word it the way that I would if I had caught my own awkward wording. Also, look at this screenshot. It misses things, right? Pro Writing Aid misses things that it should be able to catch. Where it says, she wondered how the people here dealt with the monstrous ground sloths and, period. Surely they must break fences sometimes. See, that's an obvious mistake. But here we are, Pro Writing Aid says, it's great. No grammar issues. It's fine. Finally, Master Blackwood. So I was writing book 2 in the Nightshade Unicorn series, and I had an innkeeper named Master Blackwood. He was the proprietor of the inn. And Pro Writing Aid notified me that the word master had racist connotations and whatnot. And it suggested that I could say Primary Blackwood, which doesn't make sense. Now, I could use a different title for the innkeeper, but Master Blackwood is the entirely non-racially charged term for this context. This context dates back a few centuries before the transatlantic slave trade, which was a horrible thing to happen, but I am using the word correctly, and wrong suggestions. I guess it boils down to incorrect suggestions. And even if the suggestion were correct or not wrong, say it's equally fine to do what I did and do what it's suggesting. There was a bug where you can say, hey, there's this rule in the software that's catching this supposed mistake of mine, and you can turn off the rule so you don't see that particular suggestion again. I did, and it kept coming back, and it kept coming back. So I kept reporting an incorrect suggestion, because if I have to keep seeing it, the engineers have to keep seeing it. I'm sure they fixed it by now. I hope they fixed it by now. All that is to say, yes, it's a very nifty tool. It's not free. It costs a couple or a few hundred dollars one time, then you have it forever. But it is not perfect, just so you know. I probably said too much about this. I'm wasting my time. I need to get through this and get some sleep. Okay, maps, right? Maps. Option 1, hire a map maker. That's easy. Now, network, don't go in blind. Don't just grab somebody some unknown to you. I can recommend Kate Korsak. She doesn't know that I'm recommending her right now. She was just a guest on my podcast last season. And she does commissions. So if you just really want to hire somebody to do maps, look her up, and I'm sure she'd love some business. Option two, have fun with it and draw it yourself. There is going to be a learning curve with whatever tool you use. There's going to be a learning curve, and that goes for any of the softwares that I'm mentioning, like with LibreOffice or Atticus. Okay, so there are different tools out there, different options to pick from for mapping. The only one of these that I have tried is Incarnate. I don't remember which ones of the others cost money. They might all cost money, or maybe most. I don't know. But you can see that if based on your preference, different tools might be better to make the map that you want to make. I use Incarnate, which has a free tier. I pay $25 a year, which is a very reasonable fee. And this is what it looks like inside the tool. It's all online. You don't like install an app. You do it in the browser. And these are different kind of drafts of Clonuinard, the World of the Nightshade Unicorn, and a couple of things that my daughter was doing also. And this is what the editing interface is like, without going deep into it, because this is only a screenshot. You can grab the shovel tool to add or subtract terrain, or texture. And then you'd go to the paintbrush tool and you can colorize the foreground. So I have the foreground is the land and the background is the water. You can colorize the foreground. And then you can go to the sticker tool or stamp tool and you can add stamps. Like these cities are a stamp and these mountains are stamps and all these trees are stamps. And there's a path tool. So I drew like national borders with the path tool. There's a text tool and you can bend the text. It's pretty cool. I like this tool. Incarnate, I would recommend it, yes. And you can also explore, like, if you want to do a tabletop game campaign, you can go and other people have allowed their maps to be downloadable. And you can go and grab a campaign map and print it out for your own use. So that's there. And this is the World of the Nightshade Unicorn. Huzzah. All right, so cover art. You'll want cover art, right? Option one is to hire an artist. I would recommend it if feasible. And again, when you hire somebody, network. Don't go in blind. Make sure you know who you're getting. Option two, do it yourself or have your friend do it. And it can look amateurish. I would not recommend it unless you legit have some skill. My daughter, actually, she might legit do some illustration work in the future. I could learn that skill, but I don't have time. It is just not one of I haven't paid the price in time practicing and studying that art, the visual art. So I hired somebody. Now, AI exists. Again, if you use generative AI, some people will judge you. I have a typo here. Okay, I'll have to fix that typo. For once, I went with option one, and I hired vividcovers.com. So she does great work. I'm sure if you want to go get a cover done, she'd love your business. She's established, and she costs money, so that was money that I was willing to pay because I wanted a quality cover. With option one, you're entering a contract. So make sure you have clear agreements on copyright, ownership or transference or license, whatever. Make sure you have clear agreements for how you're going to proceed through revisions and whatnot. Have a clear timeline in writing, in the contract. Have a clear format that the artist will deliver the finished product to you. Also, is the artist going to format your cover for you? Maybe or maybe not. So make sure you work these things out in the contract. Now, your artist that you hire might be prepared with, you know, this is how I do things, and that's just kind of part of the package that you hire. Just be aware and look and make sure that what they're doing is above board and like industry standard. As you go through the process, make sure you communicate clearly. When they send you a draft, communicate your input and say like, oh yeah, you know, I like this, I don't like that, because they're not going to know how to help you if you don't communicate what you're looking for. So give that clear feedback. And again, like I said, vet or network, right? Network it. Don't go in blind. Hire somebody intentionally. Like, you want this person to do the art. So you select the artist. Now trust him or her. Your vision may not be what the book needs. Talk with the artist. Trust the artist, trust the process, but also know that you are the boss, because it's your book and you're paying for a cover for your book. So yeah. This is what option one got for me. This beautiful art. I think she did a great job. I hired her again for book two. I will hire her again for book three when the time comes for that. Now, I paid in the hundreds of dollars for each work. And then that was a licensed deal, a licensed contract. And I ran a Kickstarter for book one, and I paid, like, after the Kickstarter funded, I paid extra to buy the full rights. So I own this image, and I can use it however I want. And then I went ahead and did the same with this image as well. I think she did a great job. Now, she does do formatting. I'll get to formatting later. Now, option two, do it yourself. There are software options that exist, or maybe you want to like do it on paper. That's on you. Software options, GIMP and Krita are both free. This, you just got Pond image was something I did several years ago. And this drawing of the girl, it's Mary from Mary and the Witch's Flower, but my daughter drew this in Krita. So you see GIMP with the chess pieces and Krita with the girl holding a book. So these things are free. There's going to be a learning curve. Find some online tutorials. Just be aware, there will be a learning curve and it will take time. So you can hire somebody, and this will still take time, but this will take that time plus the learning time, right? So formatting your cover, it's something that needs to be done. Vivid Covers does do cover formatting, not just the art itself, but formatting as well. And the package that I bought had the ebook and one formatted print cover, like ready for print formatted cover file. And I was really trying to do things on a budget, so I did not pay for more cover formatting. And so I took what the art that she gave me, and I did my own formatting for, because so there's the ebook and there's Ingram Spark. I think she formatted for me the Ingram Spark paperback, and then I had to format Amazon hardcover and paperback and Ingram Spark paperback. And then later I put it on Book Vault, and that's I did that formatting myself as well. You can do some things in GIMP. Inkscape exists. I don't remember how adept it would be for this application. Scribus is what I use. It is free. It's open source. It there is a learning curve, of course. You might need to be good at Googling or talking to AI, which is great for, like, how do I do things with software? Great for doing that. Scribus is this tool that you see in front of you, and you can see the boxes around all the things where I was moving things around. It's tedious. It's not for the faint. Doing it yourself is not for the faint of heart, because it's tedious. It's easy to get things wrong. And I mentioned having to do it for Amazon and IngramSpark and BookVault, both as hardcover and softcover. And not only that, but I did also on IngramSpark, I did hardcover and softcover Kickstarter edition for book one. And all of these things, you have to nudge the different things around a little bit. So it's not for the faint of heart, but it can be done. And it can be done for free. And you can get beautiful covers. Formatting your manuscript. Let's go back inside the book. Option one is to hire it out. I've seen some reasonable prices out there. I don't remember how much, but network. Know who you're paying money to. Don't go in blind. And option two, tools exist to help you out. This is less frustrating than formatting the cover, although it may be more tedious because a book is long and you need to go through and make sure things worked. And page counts. And anyway, so Microsoft Word, I've heard of people formatting in there. That sounds painful to me. Because, Microsoft Word isn't really built for this application. I'm sure it can do it, and I'm sure you can accomplish just as good a product. But for me, it would be more tedious and difficult than in Atticus. Vellum exists also, but that either used to only be for Mac or still is only for Mac, so I don't use it. And you have decisions to make. Style, trim size, so like font style, right? And font size and trim size, the how tall and how wide is your book? And then like, do you want every chapter to have a number at the top or just a title or both? As you can see that I did chapter one, Alabva and Melier. So all these formatting decisions to be made. Now, it sounds like I'm talking a lot about Atticus, it's because I appreciate the tool. I have no affiliation with them. I am only a customer, but I do like the tool. It is not perfect. I ran into a bug that was pretty frustrating that made it so that I was not able to export my manuscript, my formatted manuscript, for book two. And you know, you look things up and it's like maybe you used some characters that don't work. So I went back through and I copied and pasted and made sure that there were no bad characters, and it was corrupted on their side of things. So I had to recreate the book. That was really frustrating. It's not a perfect tool, but it is a very nifty tool and I do love it. So you can see that I have these different, so they have stock profiles. They call these profiles, and here we are. Earlier we were under writing, now we're under formatting. This is the formatting interface, and you can use one of the stock profiles, or you can create a new profile or theme. Sorry, they call them themes, not profiles. And so you can go, or you can take one of the stock ones and change it to create a custom theme. So you can see, and I have different themes here, one for hardcover and one for paperback, because in the theme, you choose the trim size and the font size. So, yeah. And that's how it is. And you can export the EPUB file, the ebook, and you can export the PDF for the print books. Another thing. Atticus is not good for poetry. My books have a song in them. I want to do more songs later, but later. I guess there's kind of two songs in the first book, but they don't format well. So like I put the song into my books as into my book as images, and I need to go and massage that. See, I need to go back and do it differently in the ebook and the print books, because the image can show up differently on the ebook, and the image shows up as a different size in the hardcover and in the paperback. Because they are different trim sizes. So I know that is an issue. I think it's perfect for the hardcover. And so in the paperback, you like turn the page and there's this text that's bigger than everything else because it was an image. Not a perfect tool. Has a couple of shortcomings, but I do love it. It is very nifty. When you want to export again, you can make some tweaks, and boom, there it is. And I talked way too much about that. I need to zip along. So I'm glad that I am rehearsing this so I can remember to not talk about those things in such depth, because I want to leave time for questions. Now, the number one truth of publishing, this is according to me, is money. And I'm not the only one who says this, but money flows from the publisher to the author, not the other way around. If somebody comes and says, hey, you know, I'll be your publisher, I'll publish your book for you, and it's going to cost you this much, that's not a publisher. That's a vanity press. And they only want your money. They don't care at all if your book is successful. They only want your money. They want to sell you the package. Now, hybrid publishers do exist. Okay, so publishing. Option one, in my opinion, the hard way, is the traditional route. You get an agent, you submit it to different publishers, you submit, and you submit, you submit, you submit, you submit, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. Maybe you'll get published. Option two, publish it yourself. You can buy an ISBN. Depending on what you want to do with your book, this may be optional. You do not have to have an ISBN to upload your book to Amazon, whether for ebooks or for print books. There's a lot you can do without an ISBN these days. And they're expensive. Like buying one ISBN, what is it? Is it $120, $130? In the US, in different countries, different prices. I think in Canada, they're free. Or maybe that's Australia. They're free. Anyway, I bought a batch of them because I was intending to have lots of books and lots of editions, right? So that I have the paperback, I have the hardcover, I have the ebook, and then I have the paperback, hardcover, and ebook of the Kickstarter edition, and then there's book two. So like when you do the math, I have 9 books out right now. I'm using 9 ISBNs, and I paid like $500. I got a batch of 100 ISBNs. It was $5 each. So using a single ISBN is cheap for me. It's $5. I want to have a new edition. ISBN is $5. No worries. Now. You can publish absolutely free, like I was saying. Like you can upload to Amazon without an ISBN. You can upload to Draft2Digital without an ISBN. An ISBN is good for unifying the different stores, though. Like if you want to identify, I'm not expressing this well. But if you want to be clear that this ebook on this platform is the same as this ebook on this platform, that ISBN is the unifying factor. But it is optional for a lot of things. There is print on demand these days. You can, again, Amazon, Drafted Digital, IngramSpark, BookVault. You can publish, depending on the platform, you can publish absolutely for free. I would recommend, at the very minimum, order a proof copy before you let it go live, because things get messed up. With Amazon, I'm using a non-standard trim size for my paperback. And you can enter a custom trim size, but if you go back and like change something and then come back and start over, whatever, that custom trim size is gone, or at least that's what happened to me. And so I got my first copy, and it was smaller than the hardcover. You open it up, and the text all looks small. That's because the trim size was bigger than it was supposed to be. And the text inside was the correct size. Anyway, so these things exist. Now you need to get the word out. Social media is a thing these days. I'm not going to go deeply into it. You should have a presence, probably. If not, maybe it'll work. But if you're not out in the world somehow, nobody's going to know that your book exists. You need to be out there reminding people and letting them know what your book offers. Also, you can do events. You can go do libraries. They'll often let you come in and do a book signing, or bookstores, and conventions, like me at Metrotham Con selling my book this weekend, books this weekend. Now, you can be scrappy. So you see what I'm doing in this picture? I'm ironing my table skirt, except it's not really a table skirt because I was really trying to do things on a budget. And a custom table skirt is going to cost you something in the neighborhood of $200. But a custom printed fitted bed sheet on Amazon was $35. So yeah, that's what I did for to have a table skirt. That and a black tablecloth from Walmart for $12. So for $37, sorry, $47 instead of 200. Author website. I would recommend having a website because it's a resource. It's somewhere where people can go to, oh, they heard of you. Okay, let's go and find out more. So you can have these links. It's not difficult these days. Platforms exist. If you're unsure how to do it, talk to an AI. They're actually really good at saying you can, at like guiding you through tech support, I guess. I would recommend WordPress as a software platform. WordPress hosting exists. You don't have to host your WordPress site on WordPress. I don't. This one is hosted on DreamHost, and I'm currently setting up another one, not an author page, but I'm setting up another website that is a WordPress based website on SiteGround. So you don't have to host it on WordPress. And you see how I kind of have a Linktree type thing here. You don't have to pay money to Linktree. I would recommend don't do that, because you can set something up pretty similar. Not difficult. It's probably easier through Linktree. It's probably easier. So if you just really want the ease of setup, then go ahead and go to Linktree. But they're gonna They're gonna take your money, and I think it's overcharged. Anyway, so podcasting is another way that you can get the word out or just kind of have fun, kind of explore. So, like, my podcast is exploratory in nature. And anyway, so what is a podcast really? How does it work? A podcast is a blog. It's a blog with audio content. It's an RSS feed. Somebody subscribes, and when they subscribe, they get updates, and the content that comes is audio or video. It can be hosted anywhere online. There are well-known podcast hosting sites. You don't have to use those. Those can make things easier for you. Some of them cost a few dollars a month. Some of them are free, but they insert ads, and like it's not optional, or maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't used those sites. Podcast apps like Apple Podcasts or the defunct Google Podcasts, or what I use is there's Spotify. You know, probably the most famous podcast app really, Spotify. Or what I use is called Podcast Addict. These are resources that contain directories of podcasts. So you can set up your own podcast. You can set up your own RSS feed on your own website. And how do you get in those podcast apps is basically you tell them that your podcast exists. You have to, depending on the platform, you might have to fill out some extra information. For some platforms, you just give them the URL and they go and scrape it and they check it out like, oh yeah, this is a legit podcast. It meets the criteria. And then boom, you land in their directory. So I did that, and you can go into YouTube. Sorry, not YouTube. I'll get there. But you can go into Spotify. You can go into Apple Podcasts. And you can search for the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast, and boom, there I am. And you can subscribe, and whenever I publish an episode, boom, there it is in your feed. I am also doing it on YouTube. And now, so for YouTube, I have to upload it to YouTube. And I'm doing video on Substack, and I'm doing video on Odyssey. So whatever I upload to YouTube, it has the same audio as my RSS feed. So I do some video editing, I do some audio editing, and the video goes on YouTube with the audio, right, in the video file. And the audio goes up to the RSS feed. And sorry, I'm going to try to not be too technical details in the presentation. If you want more details, ask me. I'd love to clear anything up. So to record a podcast, essentially to record a solo podcast, all you need is a mic and a computer. You need to record, and you are the boss of your own podcast. You can choose how much you want to be picky about audio quality. If you're not too picky and it can sound like a phone call, that's on you. And you can take a phone call quality recording, and you can upload that, and maybe people will subscribe. With podcasts, people tend to be there for the words, not for the immersive audio experience. There are exceptions. Depends on the podcast, right? If you're doing an audio play, then you'll want to pay more attention to audio quality than if you're just doing interviews, right? And I do both. I'm kind of in the middle. But I don't do audio play, but I do some story narration, and I hope to ramp that up in the near-ish future. My microphone is an AKG Perception 120 USB microphone. I bought it in 2013. Maybe it was 2012, one of those. But it's over 10 years old, but it's good enough for what I'm doing. I edit with Audacity. Audacity is a free software. Pretty powerful, pretty nifty tool. For interviews, you'll need, you need to be able to record the other person. So whether you meet in person or you use a conferencing app, somehow you need to be able to record that interview. I use Squadcast, comes with Descript. It is not free. You can hypothetically use you could use a Facebook call. I did one episode. I recorded one episode over Skype one time before I got Descript so I could record consistently. And actually more than once, I think. Anyway, so Skype was a thing. Skype is defunct now. It's just Teams. But you need a way to record your guest's voice. Squadcast affords me that capability. Some people use Zoom. I should list Zoom in here. I was trying to think of that. So the quality that you can deliver with the app that you're using should influence, or the quality that you need, that you require for your application, for your type of podcast, should influence what tool you wind up using. If you do video, like I do, you might need something to capture what I'm doing right now. As I record this podcast, I am using OBS Studio. It's a free software. There's a screenshot of it, and you can see that you can set up captures. You capture a window, or you capture a screen, or you can just slap a file on the screen like I did there with my photo. And you can capture audio. So you can, maybe you won't need this. I used this without, when I was using, for a couple of years, my phone as my webcam. I needed to do a weird thing. So I needed OBS to do. You very well might not need it. I forgot to say, so when you record an interview, you need to record your voice and your guest's voice separately. Maybe it wouldn't be essential for your podcast, but for me, I consider it essential. So my microphone is recording my voice. My guest's microphone records my guest's voice. And Squadcast is able to give me our recordings separate. Then I take that into Audacity and a tool called VSDC, which is freemium. You can use it for free. You can pay for premium features on an annual subscription. I did once, but then it didn't seem to... It's supposed to make it run faster with hardware acceleration. Didn't seem to make a huge difference for me. So I just use it free. Here you can see that I zoomed the guest's image up to try to match our head size and height a little better on the screen. In this particular screenshot, it looks like I made her too big, but anyway. Yeah, so I use VSDC to massage the image. You can see at the very bottom of the screen, there's the intro thing. Well, I'm not going to explain that. VSDC, video editor. You can use it for free. For audiobook recording, and I am currently in these trenches, you will need a higher quality audio than you probably would for a podcast. Especially if you're going to upload to ACX to have it on Audible, they have specific standards for the files that you upload. This is the microphone that I am using to record my audiobook.
Prologue.
I wouldn't
The storm begins.
I didn't say play it yet, did I?
Tylona.
If that's not, I wouldn't necessarily recommend this mic, but it works for me. I bought it in like 2014. I don't know. Also over a decade ago. And they don't make them exactly like that. They have a similar thing these days. For Audacity, there is a plugin that you can run an ACX check, and you can see if your audio meets ACX's requirements, technical requirements. There is a learning curve, not as big as learning GIMP or Scribus. There's a little bit of learning curve to understanding how audio recording really works. It's like here it says ACX requires, of course, it says requiring British versus American. Anyway, ACX requires a certain sample rate. And that's fine. That's not an issue for me. I am able, the thing that I was checking was not at that sample rate. It was at a 48,000 hertz. But I'm able to export it at the correct sample rate, and it works. Anyway, so this is what I'm able to do with this microphone and Audacity.
He sat on a crate at the bow of the merchant ship Armadillo, gathering his thoughts while the morning sea air tousled his loose hair. And he took in the open view of the wide expanse of sea and sky.
I hope this comes through well on the recording of the podcast episode. This is ungame.
Sucks! A lone voice screamed over the top of the din. We hit rocks! Let me see with my own eyes!
Okay. Bellowed. So, yeah, whatever. So, any questions? Thanks for coming. Now that my hour is completely used up and then some. So I will certainly have to truck through this faster or not finish when I present this Friday at 5 p.m. So this is my author page. You can hop into my Discord. There's a link on my author page to come into my Discord to connect with other lovers of fantasy. You can email me. That's my email address, don@thorn.link. And I'm going to stop, and I'm going to get some sleep. And if you're out at Metrothemcon, I'll see you at 5 p.m.